Next up, we have Cybronica with Yesterday's Mascara. And that line, Yesterday's Mascara, I thought a really cool way of implying that you've been up all night, or it's, you know, early the next morning. Sort of paints an interesting picture of, you know, a moment of self-reflection. And I think that moment of self-reflection is actually kind of coolly literal, because you're actually staring at yourself in a mirror. So you're literally washing away makeup. You know, it's both literal and metaphorical self-reflection, which I thought was very cool. I like that. Also like that line, pigments devoid of tears, which I thought was intriguing. So I think that what you're trying to say is that it's a sober moment of sort of self-reflection where you're not actually charged with emotion, which I thought was interesting. Your two chord choices were E minor 6 and G add 9. I wanted to ask you what your, like, why did you settle on those chords? What was the thinking there?
I talked a little bit at the beginning, my thoughts on different ways that I could execute this challenge, and I decided that the easiest way was the cheatery way of putting in so many notes in a chord that it could be other chords. The E minor 6 chord. Also, I mean, what I do is I go back and forth between E in the bass and C in the bass. And the thing is, when you put C in the bass of that, it actually kind of becomes a C major 7 chord. Unless you call it an E minor 6 chord in 4th inversion, like I did. But I found these two chords. So that was my reasoning for using those kinds of chords. Okay. But I found these two chords. This song is about me leaving my old job and going on to a new job that I recently got. The day that I gave notice at my old job, I came home and was like super emotionally exhausted and just like sat down at the piano and was just noodling around. And I really liked this E minor 6 chord, playing around with that. And then I was thinking, all right, what could be a nice contrast to this? And I found the G add 9 chord, which I thought the E minor 6 was dark and moody. And even when you put it down to the C major 7, it was still had a moody quality to it. But moving on to the G add 9 really created like a lifting feeling, a nice hopeful feeling. When I think of this song in my synesthetic brain, like the first half is sort of dark and green and the second half is bright and yellow, and that kind of has this sort of lifting feeling. So I found the chords by noodling and purposefully trying to put in extra notes.
And it's a G add 9 because it doesn't have a 7?
Correct. If there was a 7th in there, it would be a G 9 chord.
Okay.
I believe.
Okay, cool. I also thought, like, your backing vocals, a lot of them have an ethereal quality to them. And I wanted to ask you how you sort of think about creating them and placing them sort of strategically. And how do you sort of get that sound?
When I do backing vocals, I usually do oohs or sometimes e's, but e's are very rare just because that's a very pinpointed vowel. I usually do oohs because I find ah to be a very difficult vowel to sing and sound nice. And that's like years of opera singing, like getting in my head and making me self-conscious about my vowels. you know, people standing up in a crowd in a large room full of people and being like, your aw vowel is wrong. And, you know, how could you sing like that? You sing, oh, and it should be, ah, and it's, you know, it's So I usually avoid ahs, but in this case, I went with the ah. I'm not sure specifically why I went with this vowel. I think I wanted to have that warmer, closer feeling, because like when you sing ooze, ooh, it's very pinpointed. It's closer to a sine wave. It has a nice direct feeling. But when you do ah, it sort of blends a little better, and it has a more spread and warm quality. Ah, it's also a little bit louder. And when I did these backing vocals, you know, I knew I wanted them to be close parallel thirds because I love them, but also because close parallel thirds are easy to keep in the chord. So, you know, if you start on the five and third, and then you go to the third and the first, or the tonic, you know, the one of the chord,
yeah,
they can have some movement while still staying in the chord that you are trying to outline. And also, for as to why I put them in at all, I consider these backing vocals to be kind of my auditory calling card, if you will. I really like the sound of them. It's a big part of like the music I grew up with was like my mother and her sisters singing British folk songs together in close vocal harmonies.
Nice.
So it's like a big part of like the background data of what my brain is doing at any given point, or the background activity, I should say. But yeah, so I knew that. Also, it's just so much easier than playing something on a MIDI keyboard and then choosing a synth. It's just like, oh, okay, I'm just going to sing these notes. Okay, we're good. And part of that is just like my ear knows where it needs to go.
So this song had a piano and I think a bass and just your vocals. Is there any instruments I missed?
I recorded me and the main piano together without a click. It's just sort of a live take. And then I took that, because it was played on a MIDI keyboard, I took that original piano take and I panned it so that I had two different piano MIDIs. And it creates sort of an interesting effect between the two ears, because even though the delivery is the same, the timbres are slightly different. On top of that, I found a couple of other keyboard synths that I liked. And I have higher up, sort of something playing in a high piano-like sound, as well as in the other synth, just playing the chord tones and going back and forth between half of the chord tones and the other half of the chord tones, so that it is really just those two chords.
You also mentioned strategic dissonance in your bio, which I think is an interesting concept, but I'm not sure I quite get it. Can you elaborate?
Yes. So strategic dissonance is the word that I use to cover up the fact that I was implying heavily other chords.
Okay, I get it now.
Yeah. And so the reason why I say strategic dissonance is because when I do these backing vocals, I just kind of sing what my ear expects to hear there. You know, if you've got neighbor notes or passing tones, that's when you go in your melody or your harmony line, you go in between the chord tones, so that it does create a little bit of dissonance. You're playing the four against, you know, and it's between the third and the fifth of the chord. But because it's moving, it feels like, you know, okay, we're not creating a new chord. We are sort of moving back and forth, and it creates this nice dissonance. At other times, we also have seconds, or I don't think I went as far as a seventh, but like seconds, minor thirds, major seconds, minor seconds, in those backing vocals, either against each other or against the melody. And that's to create sort of a feeling of tension so that when they release, it feels that much sweeter. Throwback to sometimes when you don't get the climax right away, it feels better in the end. Yeah.
That's about it from my notes, Ryan. What do you have?
Well, a lot of this discussion is reminding me of our Spin Tunes winning song, which was... what was it?
Oh No, Sunblock.
Oh No, Sunblock, yeah. The competition was to write two songs that would then be able to be played on top of each other as sort of the third instance of it. So you're going to have a song split into three sections of exactly the same length. And the first is going to be one song, the second is going to be a different song, and then the third is going to be them overlapped on each other. And what I wanted to do, there's a whole bunch of stuff that I needed to do in terms of like making sure that we weren't talking over each other too much and things like that in terms of the lyrics. But I also wanted to do the first part in a way that the differing chords would sound okay when overlapped in the second part. anyhow, this is absolutely possible. It worked. I think some of the people did it in this sort of competition too. And, you know, some of the stuff that we've been talking about very recently is definitely kind of the stuff that I did. I did not have this two chord, you know, limitation though. So I had it easy in comparison, but it was more about having things work when overlapped. And making one chord sound like a different chord when you're stressing a different bass or a different note, which is something that happened in this song. Now, good stuff first. This is a haunting and affecting song. I think it takes a noticeable turn midway through from a rock blues feeling to a lighter, more open second half. And that goes a long, long way towards adding variety to this song in a challenge that naturally hobbles variety. Despite doing more or less the same sort of thing throughout the song, too, the piano sounds very expressive. I mean, it's more or less just sort of arpeggiating up and down, but it's not just that. There are variations and, again, very expressive. And also the bass is strong. And, of course, the vocals are amazing, just way too good. It's really not fair. It's not fair. It's not cheating. Cheat code. But it's not fair.
It makes you feel better. I paid way too much for that style or technique.
I think it was worth it. The backing vocals are beautiful, and I think I would have liked to have had them slightly louder, just because I like them. I mean, it sounds fine at the current volume, but I'm the type that prefers too much of a good thing. If this song were competing, I think the judges would have to talk about the song, though, in some of the stuff that we've been talking about. I mean,
yeah.
I know that in the song bio, you'd noted that other chords are, quote, implied, unquote, despite the actual chords being just the two. But some of the second half, when the bass is really emphasizing sections to heavily imply extra chord changes, changes that are also implied by the vocals and backing vocals, and which are only mitigated by the, you know, manually arpeggiated piano notes. You know, I guess what I'm saying is I love this song. But if there were a debate among the judges about potentially disqualifying it, I don't know what side I'd be on.
Here's your blizzard.
DQ'd. Yeah, no, okay, so I really, really agree with you that this is not something that would pass muster if it wasn't a shadow. And honestly, the song could only be made the way that it is because it is a shadow, and I did have the freedom to mess around with it.
So you'd disqualify it?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. And there is a very specific note as to why I would disqualify it. So in the first half, I mentioned it's an E minor 6. I'm going back and forth between E and C in the bass. And even though it implies C major 7, I still think I could get away with that being an E minor 6. However, in the second half, I've got a G add 9. So it's the chord tones are G, A, B, D. And that's what's playing in the arpeggiation. In the bass, the notes are D, B, C, G for the most part. And if it weren't for the C in the bass, I would consider this to have counted. But when the C comes in, it's not part of the chord. I couldn't really justify calling it a G add 9 add 11 because there's the 11 only happens when I put it in the bass in that one spot. That's the only time that it happens. And I haven't gone through and figured out exactly what chord it creates because, like, look, G, A, B, C, it's a cluster chord.
Yeah.
But, you
is
know,
that a technical term?
Actually, yeah, cluster chord is a technical term.
Oh, okay.
And it's what it's referred to when you just got a whole bunch of seconds stacked on each other.
Crunchy.
Yeah. Well, exactly. It's those crunchy chords from the mid to late 20th century that, you know, John Cage and his friends were all about.
It's the pianist collapsed on the keyboard. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But yeah, it's G, A, B, C, D is not really a chord, but also it's not what's playing at that moment when I have C in the bass and I have to figure out what I'm doing there. I have not sat down and done an analysis of it because I always preferred writing over analyzing in school.
That makes sense.
So I haven't quite figured out what exactly that chord is, but if I sat down, I could probably figure it out. It just, it creates such a beautiful moment. And I think it is, you know, C, maybe I'm, you know, implying a C chord and having that in opposition to the G chord, having a nice four in there. Ah, a nice subdominant. What I thought was interesting was Jim of Seattle mentioned on the boards that he considers my song to be a one chord song. And I strongly disagree with this. The reason why he said that is because if you take a E minor and stick a D onto it, you know, you get E minor 7 that shares a lot of chord tones with a G major, right? It's the same thing with D minor to F major, which I mentioned on a previous song. But in this case, I would argue they're actually very separate chords. And part of that is the C, because the C works very well in the first half. It's part of that E minor 6, but it is not part of that G major add 9. And that's why it makes it into a different chord. I just especially like the feeling that the two chords evoke. They're completely different colors in my mind. They're completely different emotions in my mind. I don't consider them to be the same chord. And I find it ironic, you know, that that was his thoughts about me, because we both took the same route of using non-chord tones to extend the number of chords that we use.
Well, I've finished with my notes. Do you have any comments about the song? She's like, I'm kidding. I'm sort of not kidding. Yeah.
I was really happy with how the song turned out. It kind of felt like I was throwing spaghetti at a wall. But what stuck ended up being a really lovely pattern of spaghetti on my wall.
Yes.
To overuse that metaphor. And it's interesting what you were saying, you know, Chumpy, about the image of yesterday's mascara. I literally got that image because I was washing my face. I literally like got out of the shower to pick up my phone and like, I gotta write this down as I washed away yesterday's mascara to write down these lyrics. It was like, this works.
Oh, so you slept with that mascara on?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
It was a day.
Wow.
I was stressed out. A lot of this came very strongly, especially like, I don't know if you guys heard it on your listens, but there's a moment in the second half where underneath the singing I have a little spoken word moment that is not in my lyrics, where when I say the say now your fond farewells, not so fond and not so fair.
Not so fair, yeah.
Underneath that I say fuck you bitch, because I received an email from a coworker who did not say fuck you bitch, but heavily implied, much like my A and my C in the bass. It was heavily implied, and I like that was a big part of what drove me to the song, was just like my feeling of, don't get mad at me, I got a new job and I'm happy about it. I'm sorry you're gonna have more work, but maybe they shouldn't have conditions that make people want to quit.
Yeah.
And those conditions are, we're in the office and I'd rather work from home. So
yeah.
Nice. Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.